You're listening to The Philosopher's Note on emotional intelligence. More wisdom in less time.
Hi, this is Brian. Welcome to The Philosopher's Notes on Emotional Intelligence, Why It Can Matter More Than IQ, by Daniel Goleman. We'll start with a quote. What factors are at play, for example, when people of high IQ flounder and those of modest IQ do surprisingly well? I would argue that the difference quite often lies in the abilities called here emotional intelligence, which includes self-control, zeal, and persistence, and the ability to motivate oneself. End quote. That's Daniel Goleman from Emotional Intelligence. Emotional Intelligence, this is one of the most influential psychology books ever written that kicked off a bit of a revolution in redefining what it means to be intelligent. It's packed with goodness, and in this note we'll explore some of my favorite big ideas on how we can live with more emotional mojo. Let's jump in with a look at IQ versus EQ. That's the first big idea, IQ versus EQ. Quote, at best, IQ contributes about 20% to the factors that determine life success, which leaves 80% to other forces. Even Richard Herrnstein and Charles Murray, whose book The Bell Curve imputes a primary importance to IQ, acknowledge this. As they point out, quote, perhaps a freshman with an SAT math score of 500 had better not have his heart set on being a mathematician. But if instead he wants to run his own business, become a U.S. senator, or make $1 million, he should not put aside his dreams. The link between test scores and those achievements is dwarfed by the totality of other characteristics that he brings to life. End quote. My concern, this is now Daniel Goleman again, my concern is with a key set of those other characteristics, emotional intelligence, abilities such as being able to motivate oneself and persist in the face of frustrations, to control impulse and delay gratification, to regulate one's moods and keep distress from swamping the ability to think, to empathize, and to hope, end quote. Fantastic. So we often have a common notion that IQ means success, happiness, health, and all the other wonderful things we aspire to in life. But we might want to check that assumption, because there's actually a rather weak correlation between IQ and all that jazz. So what makes the difference? As Goleman says, quote, a key set of these other characteristics, emotional intelligence, abilities such as being able to motivate oneself and persist in the face of frustrations, to control impulse and delay gratification, to regulate one's moods and keep distress from swamping the ability to think, to empathize, and to hope. Let's check out some of those big ideas, shall we? We will start with hundreds and hundreds of ways to succeed. Quote, the time has come, Howard Gardner told me, to broaden our notion of the spectrum of talents. The single most important contribution education can make to a child's development is to help him toward a field where his talents best suit him, where he will be satisfied and competent. We've completely lost sight of that. Instead, we subject everyone to an education where, if you succeed, you will be best suited to be a college professor. And we evaluate everyone along the way according to whether they meet that narrow standard of success. We should spend less time ranking children and more time helping them to identify their natural competencies and gifts and cultivate those. There are hundreds and hundreds of ways to succeed and many, many, many different abilities that will help get you there. End quote. Howard Gardner is the Harvard psychologist who came up with the idea of multiple intelligences, suggesting that rather than the narrow vision of IQ, we can see the range of intelligences we can all possess, from logical, linguistic, visual, spatial, and musical, rhythmic, to bodily kinesthetic, interpersonal, intrapersonal, and naturalist intelligence. He also has a great comment on the highly calibrated and ultimately useless skill we develop while in school. This is Howard Gardner. He says, quote, in the course of their careers in the American school of today, most students take hundreds, if not thousands, of tests. They develop skill to a highly calibrated degree in an exercise that will essentially become useless immediately after their last day of school, end quote. I love that. As we embrace the fact that our potential is not limited by the number on our IQ test or how many Scantrons we've successfully filled out, the game becomes discovering where our greatest aptitudes and passions lie and discovering our unique path for fulfillment. So, What are your natural competencies and gifts? And how can you create a path among the hundreds and hundreds out there to create a life of meaning, fulfillment, and personally defined success? That leads us to the next big idea, the power of self-awareness. Quote, although there is a logical distinction between being aware of feelings and acting to change them, Mayer finds that for all practical purposes, the two usually go hand in hand. To recognize a foul mood is to want to get out of it. End quote. Goleman discusses the importance of heeding Socrates' injunction, know thyself, and describes the power of being aware of our internal emotional states while maintaining a, quote, an interested yet unreactive witness. As he says, quote, self-awareness is not an attention that gets carried away by emotions, overreacting and amplifying what is perceived. Rather, it is a neutral mode that maintains self-reflectiveness, even amidst turbulent emotions, end quote. We talk about this often in various notes, and Anthony DeMello has a funny way to describe his relationship to his depression. He talks about seeing himself lying in bed and saying, it is depressed, instead of I am depressed. It's pretty cool. And he says this, quote, never identify with that feeling. It has nothing to do with the I. Don't define your essential self in terms of that feeling. Don't say I am depressed. If you want to say it is depressed, that's all right. If you want to say that depression is there, that's fine. If you want to say gloominess is there, that's fine. But not I am gloomy. You're defining yourself in terms of the feeling. That's your illusion. That's your mistake. There is a depression there right now, but let it be. Leave it alone. It will pass. Everything passes everything. Your depressions and your thrills have nothing to do with happiness. Those are swings of the pendulum. If you seek kicks or thrills, get ready for depression. You want your drug? Get ready for the hangover. One end of the pendulum swings over to the other. So, how aware are you of the emotions you're experiencing? Do you get overwhelmed by them and amplify the emotions? Or can you step back and see what you're experiencing, accept the emotion, and then choose more effective thoughts and behaviors to enhance your level of happiness? I like Dan Millman's take on the subject in his great book, Everyday Enlightenment. You can see the notes on that. He says, quote, of course, we don't love painful feelings like anxiety or depression. We don't have to love or even like them, but we do have to accept them, as difficult as that can seem at times. Emotions, no matter how painful they are not the problem. The problem is dropping out of school or work, putting your family or duties of life on hold until such time as you can work out your emotional issues. Would you rather feel depressed while sitting alone in your room trying to figure it all out, or feel depressed while getting your house cleaned or your project completed? You may still feel depressed, but you have a cleaner house. The heart of accepting your emotions, this is still Dan Millman, and as you've seen, of reclaiming your will, is to do what you need to do despite what you are feeling. Accept and learn from your feelings, but don't let them run your life. By remaining productive during difficult emotional episodes, you are more likely to improve your emotional state than if you do nothing but ruminate and wait for sunny skies. End quote. That ties into the next big idea, self-mastery versus being passion's slave. Quote, a sense of self-mastery, of being able to withstand the emotional storms that the buffeting of fortune brings, rather than being passion's slave, has been praised as a virtue since the time of Plato. The ancient Greek word for it was sophrosyne, care and intelligence in conducting one's life, a tempered balance and wisdom. As Paige DuBois, a Greek scholar, translates it. The Romans and early Christian church called it temperantia, temperance, the restraining of emotional excess. The goal is balance, not emotional suppression. Every feeling has its value and significance. A life without passion would be a dull wasteland of neutrality, cut off and isolated from the richness of life itself. But, as Aristotle observed, what is wanted is appropriate emotion, feeling proportionate to circumstance. When emotions are too muted, they create dullness and distance. When out of control, too extreme and persistent, they become pathological, as in immobilizing depression, overwhelming anxiety, raging anger, and manic agitation. End quote. The virtuous mean and the ability to feel the right emotion at the right time to the right degree. Aristotle said a couple of things about this. He says, anyone can become angry, that is easy, But to be angry with the right person, to the right degree, at the right time, for the right purpose, and in the right way, that is not easy. And he also says, for both excessive and insufficient exercise destroy one's strength, and both eating and drinking too much or too little destroy health, whereas the right quantity produces, increases, or preserves it. So it is the same with temperance, courage, and the other virtues. This much then is clear. In all our conduct, it is the mean that is to be commended. End quote. And the idea of having a full scope of emotional capacity reminds me of this passage from The Power of Full Engagement. You can see the notes on that. They say, quote, to be fully engaged emotionally requires celebrating what the Stoic philosophers called anacoluthia, the mutual entailment of the virtues. By this notion, no virtue is a virtue by itself. Rather, all virtues are entailed. Honesty without compassion, for example, becomes cruelty. End quote. Love it. Integrating full spectrum. How are you looking on this front? Let's look at self-mastery versus being passion's slave. The next big idea is 10,000 hours, please. Quote, consider the role of positive motivation, the marshaling of feelings of enthusiasm, zeal, and confidence in achievement. Studies of Olympic athletes, world-class musicians, and chess grandmasters find their unifying trait is the ability to motivate themselves to pursue relentless training programs. Likewise, the best violin virtuosos of the 20th century began studying their instrument at around age 5. International chess champions started on the game at an average age of 7, while those who rose only to national prominence started at 10. Starting earlier offers a lifetime edge. The top violin students at the best music academy in Berlin, all in their early 20s, had put in 10,000 hours lifetime practice, while the second-tier students averaged around 7,500 hours. What seemed to set apart those at the very top of competitive pursuits from others of roughly equal ability is the degree to which, beginning early in life, they can pursue an arduous practice routine for years and years. And that doggedness depends on emotional traits. Enthusiasm and persistence in the face of setbacks, above all else. End quote. Love that. Malcolm Gladwell goes off on this phenomenon in his great book Outliers. He tells a bunch of fascinating stories, including one about how Bill Gates was blessed to be in a community with one of the few computers in the world at the time when he was a kid. And he happened to be the kind of kid who'd sneak out of bed at 2 a.m. and head to the computer lab where he could log in programming hours before sneaking back into bed before his mom caught him, wondering why he was always so tired. It's an amazing story. Then, when the computers became affordable for mainstream use, guess who had logged his 10,000 hours and was in a position to capitalize on it? Answer, Bill Gates. Truly fascinating stuff. And on a related note, Michael Gelb, the author of How to Think Like Leonardo da Vinci, and you can see the notes on that, talks about the research done on chess grandmasters, chess masters, and chess experts in his great audio tape, Creative Genius. It's amazing stuff. First, a little background. A chess master is so good that he can beat a room full of 25 chess experts at one time. A chess grandmaster is so good that he can beat a room full of 25 chess masters at one time. The researchers wanted to know what made chess grandmasters grandmasters. Was it superior IQ, better memory, better logic? What they discovered was that the chess masters and grandmasters were, in fact, significantly more intelligent, with significantly better memories, etc., than the chess experts. However, there was no significant difference between the grandmaster and the chess masters. They were, in essence, equally brilliant. What then distinguished the grandmasters and allowed them to so handily beat the masters if they had essentially the same intellectual capacity? Passion, or as Goleman would say, enthusiasm and persistence. The grandmasters were more passionate about chess. They loved it so much that they were always thinking about it. They lived, breathed, and ate chess. And that led to a level of excellence that was far superior to any of the other players in the world. So, what are you most passionate about? Of what will you become a grandmaster? My guess, the two will probably be the same. All right, here's the next big idea, a master aptitude. Quote, to the degree that our emotions get in the way of or enhance our ability to think and plan, to pursue training for a distant goal, to solve problems and the like, they define the limits of our capacity to use our innate mental abilities and so determine how we do in life. And to the degree to which we are motivated by feelings of enthusiasm and pleasure in what we do, or even by an optimal degree of anxiety, they propel us to accomplishment. It is in this sense that emotional intelligence is a master aptitude, a capacity that profoundly affects all other abilities, either facilitating or interfering with them. End quote. Genius. This is why emotional intelligence is a far better predictor of success in life than IQ. If you've got a super high IQ and super low control of your emotions, you simply will not manifest your highest potential. Period. That leads us to the next big idea, impulses and marshmallows. Quote, just imagine you're 4 years old and someone makes the following proposal. If you'll wait until after he runs an errand, you can have two marshmallows for a treat. If you can't wait until then, you can have only one, but you can have it right now. It is a challenge sure to try the soul of any four-year-old, a microcosm of the eternal battle between impulse and restraint. Id and ego, desire and self-control, gratification and delay. Which of these choices a child makes is a telling test. It offers a quick reading not just of character, but of the trajectory that child will probably take through life. End quote. I love that study. So can you imagine being that four-year-old choosing between one marshmallow, getting it right now, and the two marshmallows, but only if we can wait a bit? That's called impulse control. And according to Goleman, it's big. In fact, he says this about it, quote, there is perhaps no psychological skill more fundamental than resisting impulse, end quote. What's fascinating is that how a child performed on this test of delaying gratification was, quote, twice as powerful a predictor of what their SAT scores will be as is IQ at age four. IQ becomes a stronger predictor of SAT only after children learn to read, end quote. That's amazing and begs the question, why is that? Why is it that there's such high predictive ability in our emotional control at age four? Because we need to be able to regulate our impulses if we're going to perform well at anything that requires sustained attention, whether it's studying for a test, building a business, or cultivating our relationships. And the powerful thing is that even if we weren't the four-year-old that could keep our hands off the marshmallow, and we were the one that grabbed and went for the one, we can learn to develop emotional intelligence, which really is what these notes are all about. So what's the number one emotional intelligence skill you're ready to rock in your life? And as always, is now a good time to develop the skill? The next big idea is worrying and self-fulfilling prophecies. Quote, the number of worries that people report while taking a test directly predicts how poorly they will do on it. The mental resources expended on one cognitive task, the worrying, simply detract from the resources available for processing other information. If we are preoccupied by worries that we're going to flunk the test we're taking, we have that much less attention to expend on figuring out the answers. Our worries become self-fulfilling prophecies, propelling us toward the very disaster they predict. End quote. Well, that pretty much sums it up, huh? Key takeaway, let's reduce our worry and apply that energy to the challenge at hand. Gay Hendricks says this about worry in his great book, The Big Leap. You can see the notes. He says, quote, worrying is usually a sign that we're upper limiting. It is usually not a sign that we're thinking about something useful. The crucial sign that we're worrying unnecessarily is when we're worrying about something we have no control over. Worrying is useful only if it concerns a topic we can actually do something about, and if it leads to our taking positive action right away. All other worry is just upper limit noise, designed by our unconscious to keep us safely within our zone of excellence or zone of competence. And that leads us to the final big idea, the science of hope. Quote, hope, modern researchers are finding, does more than offer a bit of solace amid affliction. It plays a surprisingly potent role in life, offering an advantage in realms as diverse as school achievement and bearing up in onerous jobs. Hope, in a technical sense, is more than the sunny view that everything will turn out all right. Snyder defines it with more specificity as, quote, believing you have both the will and the way to accomplish your goals, whatever they may be. It's brilliant. And I love this, believing you have both the will and the way to accomplish your goals, whatever they may be. That sounds a lot like Nathaniel Brandon's description of self-esteem in his classic, The Six Pillars of Self-Esteem. You can see the notes on that. I love this line from his great book. He says, quote, self-esteem contemplates what needs to be done and says, I can. Pride contemplates what has been accomplished and says, I did, end quote. So how's your hope? Do you believe you have both the will and the way to accomplish your goals, whatever they may be? If yes, rock it. If not, let's keep on hitting the optimism muscle gym with these philosopher's notes and other training as we develop our EQ, our emotional intelligence, and show up more and more radiantly alive in this precious hero's journey of ours. That is a quick look at emotional intelligence, a very, 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 very quick look. If you liked it, I think you'd enjoy digging in deeper. I also think you'll enjoy the notes on the How of Happiness, which is an awesome kind of more modern take on what it takes to be happy from a scientific perspective. It's really good. I think you'll also enjoy the notes on Happier, on Everyday Enlightenment, on The Big Leap, and on The Six Pillars of Self-Esteem. Let's take a quick peek at Daniel Goleman's bio and then some of the quotes from the sidebar, and we will call it a note. So Daniel Goleman is an internationally known psychologist who lectures frequently to professional groups, business audiences, and on college campuses. Working as a science journalist, Goleman reported on the brain and behavioral sciences for the New York Times for many years. His 1995 book, Emotional Intelligence, was on the New York Times bestseller list for a year and a half, with more than 5 million copies in print worldwide in 30 languages. That's from his website where you can learn more, danielgoleman.info. How about some quotes from the sidebar? This is Daniel Goleman. All of them will be Daniel Goleman unless I say otherwise. Hope was a better predictor of their first semester grades than were their scores on the SAT. That's about college students. Hope predicted their scores, their grades better than their SAT scores. That's fascinating. He also says, students who are anxious, angry, or depressed don't learn. People who are caught in these states do not take in information efficiently or deal with it well. Emotional aptitude is a meta ability, determining how well we can use whatever other skills we have, including raw intellect. There was an emotional brain long before there was a rational one. We too often confront postmodern dilemmas with an emotional repertoire tailored to the urgencies of the Pleistocene. That was a long time ago. We want to evolve beyond that response. And finally, for better or worse, intelligence can come to nothing when the emotions hold sway. So there you go. Hope you enjoyed some of my favorite big ideas from Emotional Intelligence, Why It Can Matter More Than IQ by Daniel Goleman. Really enjoyed sharing. Hope you enjoyed and look forward to sharing more with you soon. Have an awesome day.
We hope you enjoyed this Philosopher's Note. Please go to www.philosophersnotes.com to download more.